Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Coming up here on today's show, we got a very busy lineup for you. We're going to talk markets in just a moment with Don Rose from U.S. Commodities ahead of Thursday's USDA numbers. Dusty Johnson, Congressman Dusty Johnson from South Dakota, is going to be joining us in segment two. Going to get an update while Capitol Hill is on recess. We're going to talk farm bill, some of the Chinese issues that have been ongoing, the recent testimony in front of the House Ag Committee last week. I know those are just a few of the issues we're going to talk about with Congressman Dusty Johnson coming up here on the show today. In segment three, we're going to get an update on the situation with the bridge collapse in Baltimore and the impacts it could have on ag trade and more. Mike Steenhoek with the Soy Transportation Coalition is going to join us after the bottom of the hour. And we're also going to get an update on the situation surrounding HPAI, bird flu found in dairy cattle in Kansas, Texas, now in Oklahoma, New Mexico as well. Michael Dykes with the International Dairy Foods Association, IDFA, is going to join us for an update here towards the end of the show in segment four today. Our program brought to you by our friends at Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Let's take a look at what's happening in the market trade here as we are gearing up for those prospective plantings and quarterly grain stocks numbers coming up here from USDA as we head towards the end of the week. Don Rose with U.S. Commodities joins us here on AOA. Don, it's great to have you back on
the show.
You got your coffee pot cleaned up and ready to go for the USDA madness coming up on Thursday by chance? Don, are you there with us? I can't hear you right now. Don, we're having trouble hearing you.
Oh, everybody.
Well, we're trying to connect with Don Rose here from U.S. Commodities, and I could hear a little background noise there, but we're having a little bit of a connection issue, it sounds like, here, and we're going to work on getting that fixed. And I know we're watching these markets kind of mixed activity here as we look at the trade action here. As we work through Wednesday's session, kind of a little bit lower in quartered soybeans, 3 to 6 lower, and the wheat trade a little bit higher as well, and mixed activity in the cattle trade here and the hog trade as well on this Wednesday session as traders seemingly squaring up positions here ahead of that USDA report. Let's see if we got Don with us here. Don, can you hear me? All right. Well, we are having some trouble trying to connect with Don here, and seems like we don't have a feed coming down the line to him, so we do apologize for that. I know we're going to try and get that fixed here, and we will try to connect with Don here in just a second. As again, I was mentioning these markets, watching some of the issues between the trade here and wondering what that prospective plantings number is going to look like, plus the grain stocks numbers. That's going to be the big thing. Corn, average trade estimate out there ahead of the USDA numbers for the prospective plantings, 91.77 million acres. The soybean estimate, 86.53. All wheat, 47.33. Winter wheat, 34.87. Other spring, 10.8, and Durham at 1.6. So that is something that we are watching here as we work through this trade and try to figure out where exactly those numbers are going to fall here with the USDA reports coming up on Thursday. And then, of course, that is going to be ahead of a Good Friday holiday into a three-day holiday weekend that could be quite interesting, and be interesting to see how the trade reacts as we get out of that holiday weekend. So a lot of interesting things to kind of take note of and keep in mind here as we watch and working through the USDA numbers coming up in just a few days. Well, I know we're working to establish connection with Don here again. We'll try to catch him before the end of this segment. But other news headlines, I mentioned the HPAI outbreak, and we're watching that in dairy cattle here in Kansas and Texas, and now some reports in New Mexico and Oklahoma as well. And I know we're going to get that update from Dr. Michael Dykes with IDFA coming up here at the end of the show today, and looking forward to talking with him and just learning more. I know there's a lot of stress out there. Folks are stressing that there is no impact to human health. That is one of the big messages, that they don't expect many impacts to trade, but a little bit of nervousness seen in the markets, especially on Tuesday in cattle, just some concerns. And also on the corn side too, maybe some impacts to feed demand here. So watching this and how it jumped from birds to dairy cattle, that remains to be seen. But still a tough situation that we are going to be watching here, and we're going to get that update again coming up here at the end of the show with Dr. Michael Dykes. Looking at fertilizer prices, let's look at the latest DTN retail trends out for the third week of March. Two fertilizers were up considerably. DTN designates a significant move as anything 5% or more. Urea was 8% more expensive compared to last month and had an average price of $574 a ton. UAN 28 was 6% higher in price, looking back a month, and had an average price of $358 a ton. Six fertilizers were all slightly higher or lower in price. Potash was slightly lower and had an average price of $506 a ton as well. UAN 32 was back above the $400 a ton level for the first time since the third week of December 2023. That week, the average price was $402 a ton. Now we look at DAP, an average price of $778 a ton, MAP at $823 a ton, and 1034-0, that also was at $628 a ton. Real quick, I believe we got Don Rose back here before the end of this segment. Don, apologies, had some technical issues there. A couple thoughts from you real quick, what you're watching in this grain trade, Don.
Yeah, no problem, Jesse. Good morning. Yeah, I think the number one thing when you're looking at it, we have the acres and the stocks report out tomorrow, 11 o'clock Central Time. So it's a market evening up. Chart patterns are, for the most part, trying to hold positive. We'll see. But it's a market moving report, Jesse.
Yeah, very, very much so. And I think at this point, I think it's a good reminder, Don, you know, to tell farmers, we can't outguess this report. At this point, we're going to just have to make sure we manage our risk and prepare ourselves for whatever USDA throws our way, right?
Well, exactly. You know, it's also a Good Friday, three-day weekend up. And then we have the end of the month, the end of the quarter with the fund movement out here. I imagine when you come back next week, it's going to be all about weather, planning weather in North America and South America production.
All right. Don, apologies again. I will connect with you, and we will get you back on the show again in a couple of days for a full segment. And thanks for working through things with us and joining us here this morning on AOA. Thanks a bunch.
Yep. Happy Easter.
Don Rose there with U.S. Commodities. We'll come back and talk with South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson next on AOA. Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, as we examine how the modern cooperative system solves today's biggest challenges. We'll be talking to CHS experts and farmers and ranchers just like you, and we'll learn how cooperatives apply innovation and technology to help co-op owners get more value every day. Join us Around the Table every Tuesday, or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
If you miss an episode of AOA, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Agriculture of America on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America. Jesse Allen with you here on the show. And apologies, having a little bit of phone issues here, to getting Don Rose connected there in segment one. And I know I'm going to work with Don. We're going to get him back on the show here again coming up in a few days. And get his thoughts on what's been happening in the market, trade, and more. I know we are working to connect with South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson here on the show right now. And Congressman, hopefully you are with us here on AOA, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. And hope you can hear me. How are you, Congressman? All right. Sounds like we are still having a little bit of phone issue there with South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson. So we are going to work on that and try to get him reconnected with us here for the segment. And we believe we might have him now. Congressman Dusty Johnson, are you with us here on AOA?
Yeah, you bet I am.
Well, there we go. I think we got the phone issues figured out. So that is a good thing. How are you, sir? It's good to have you back on the show with us here today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start. I know Capitol Hill's on a bit of a recess right now. We still got a lot of things to on our plate, so to speak, Congressman. Let's start with the farm bill. Latest that you are hearing there, is this something we're going to get done ahead of the presidential election now that the appropriations process is out of the way, or is it something we might have to wait another year here for?
Yeah, I mean, I feel pretty good. And I should mention, when people talk about a recess, I think some listeners may get the sense that, like, there's not work going on. Maybe members of Congress are sitting on a beach eating bonbons or something. And, of course, that isn't the case. I mean, the reality is that, you know, 90% of what we do in Washington, we also are able to do when we're working remotely from home. I mean, if it's about reading bills, writing bills, studying issues, talking to constituents, I mean, we're still putting in the 15-hour days trying to get that stuff done. And that is certainly true with regard to the farm bill as well. I think we're making good progress on the text, at least on the House side. I think we'd be able to release text in a few weeks. And I think we'd be able to have markup in the committee a few weeks after that. And then I think we'd be able to have floor action a few weeks after that. Now, as your listeners all know, getting a bill out of the House in and of itself doesn't make anything law. You got to get it through the Senate and then signed by the president as well. And so we're still a long ways away from getting that done. The practical reality is if we don't get all that done, I think by early summer, then we probably would be looking at lame duck action on the farm bill November or December.
Okay. Well, and you think about, you know, getting a bill from the House over to the Senate side. I know there's been a lot of talk here in recent weeks about Senate Ag Committee Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow. She's had a lot of pushback against some thoughts of taking money from nutrition programs and things like that. And it seems like she has kind of dug her heels in a little bit on some of those issues. Is that something, do you sense that to be the case on Capitol Hill?
Yes, I think you described it well. Debbie is playing a little hard to get. You know, there had been a sense that because she's not running again, I mean, she's done at the end of the year, that she would want a legacy item. She'd want the Stabenow Farm Bill. She's really aggressively counter-messaged that, just saying this isn't going to have anything to do with her legacy. She's got plenty of legacy items. You know, if the House isn't willing to compromise pretty dramatically on our values, then, you know, forget about it. We just won't do a farm bill this year. I think a lot of that is bluster. I mean, everybody should know that getting a farm bill done this year is better than us playing tiddlywinks. You do have a certain type of politician who always feels like they'll have more leverage in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months, and so let's just wait to do anything. I just think that's insanity. I mean, it's time to be big boys and big girls, roll up our sleeves, get this done. I don't care who's in control of the Senate next year. The farm bill's not going to look that different because we all know it works. We know that crop insurance is important. We know we need to increase reference prices for Title I programs. We know we need to do a better job of working lands conservation. And, of course, we know we need to feed the hungriest in America. Let's just get all that done.
No, those are great thoughts. I would agree with you on that for sure, Congressman. Let's talk China. I know last week we had a hearing in front of the House Ag Committee on China. A lot of different various experts shared testimony, including South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem and others. Talk about that hearing for us a little bit and some of your thoughts on the whole issue surrounding China and U.S. agriculture.
Yeah, I've been working pretty hard to get Governor Noem there. Of course, a lot of people are talking about China. I've been talking about China and their attempt to gain more control over the global supply chain regarding food for a long time. But, you know, sometimes it helps to bring a new voice into the conversation in D.C. Of course, Kristi Noem is not new to D.C. She spent 8 years in the U.S. House. But I think she did a good job of really crystallizing why this matters. We know that China has increased their holdings of foreign farmland by 1,000% in the last 10 years. We know China has increased their holdings of agricultural processing facilities located outside of China by 1,000% in the last 10 years. I think the fact that I've been talking about that for so long is one of the reasons I was added to the Select Committee on China. But Governor Noem did a great job, I think, of reiterating those issues and talking about what a path forward needs to look like.
Well, and thinking about some of these issues, I know that it continues to be one of those, and I think this ties in well with just with trade in general and the trade agenda for U.S. agriculture. You know, there's always been so much focus on China, but I think for agriculture, Congressman, we really need to take a step back and think about diversifying our ag trade potential around the world with other folks outside of just relying on China, right?
Yes, I'm really glad you said it the way you did. Sometimes when we talk about the concerns about us giving China too much control over our economy, when we say that, sometimes people think we just need to retreat into America. The reality is you don't diversify your supply chains. You don't diversify your markets by putting them all into one basket, the domestic basket. This is really about looking more to friends and allies. We know that Colombia is the number five market for South Dakota corn. Well, you know, it's not as though the Colombians eat that much more corn than anybody. It's not as though Colombia is a particularly populated country, but it's a huge market for South Dakota corn because we've got a trade agreement. Our country has a trade agreement with Colombia. And so we know these agreements can have a huge impact on market access. So yes, let's go out and diversify those markets. In any given year, well over half of America's soybeans flow into China. We're never going to drive that number to zero, but let's figure out a way to put that number down so the Chinese Communist Party doesn't have quite so much leverage over us if we get into a tense spot.
Well, and of course, some of that diversification comes back to having a trade agenda. And I know, Congressman, we haven't seen much of the way of a new trade deal here in many years, and it doesn't feel like there's been a lot of urgency from this administration to open up new trade avenues with different countries or renew existing trade deals, has there?
Yeah, you're right. Our trade negotiator, Ambassador Tai, you know, listen, she's brilliant. She knows this stuff inside and out. She is a savvy operator. In many ways, I think her skill set is not being well utilized by the Biden administration. It's pretty clear to me they don't have any desire to enter into any new bilaterals or multilaterals. I mean, they're entering into some agreements that really change things on the margins. But this, I mean, listen, this is not what we need to be doing. We know what works. We know that the world is hungry for our best in the world beef, beans, dairy, corn, and other agricultural products. I don't know why we're making it so hard for them to be a willing buyer of our willing seller products. And so I've sent a number of letters. I've had a number of conversations with Ambassador Tai and with the folks at the White House just saying, you know, let's unlock this incredible potential of the American rancher and farmer. We don't see them moving in that direction, though.
No, we definitely do not. Hopefully that can change. Well, with that, South Dakota Congressman Dusty Johnson, glad we could get connected with you here today on AOA, sir. Thanks for joining us. As always, I will wish you and your family a happy Easter weekend coming up, and we will talk to you again real soon. Thanks for joining us today.
Very, very good. Thanks much.
Dusty Johnson, Congressman from South Dakota, joining us here today on AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex. Not all greases created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more. Just go to Cenex.com. All right, coming up next, we're going to get some updates on that bridge collapse in Baltimore and some of the impacts we could see on ag trade. Mike Steenhoek with the Soy Transportation Coalition joins us next on AOA.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of what's happening in the market trade. Jesse Allen with you here as we take a look at things. Grains and oilseeds on Wednesday, kind of a mixed bag. Wheat finding a little bit of support while quartered soybeans have been under pressure. We have some concern in the corn and soy markets with this bird flu HPAI outbreak in dairy cattle in Texas, Kansas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. And there's some fears that if this bird flu outbreak continues to spread into beef cattle, it could cause concerns for feed demand. So that is something that's been weighing on the grains here early this week. Otherwise, traders seemingly just gearing up for whatever USDA is going to throw our way on Thursday's quarterly grain stocks and prospective plantings reports. Managed money seems to be defending its big short positions here a little bit in overnight trade amid weaker chart signals, and that's kind of continuing here into the day session. There's also an undercurrent of thinking in the market that the closure of the Port of Baltimore is negative for the commodity sector. A closure is a big deal. Its impact on some commodities is notable, such as fertilizer, coffee, and sugar, but its impact on the sector as a whole seems to be minimal. Supplies will find alternate routes, albeit at a higher cost for impacted commodities. So something to think about there, but not an overly big issue for the commodity trade. The bigger focus is, of course, on the USDA reports on Thursday, and then we'll head into a three-day holiday weekend. Also, the stock futures fairly quiet on Wednesday, reflecting a little bit of cautious optimism ahead of Friday's PCE inflation data, which is scheduled for release when the markets are closed on Good Friday. Livestock trade is cautiously mixed here on Wednesday as well, with feeders finding a little bit of selling pressure once again in deferred contracts. This is AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Atlin.
Being blind doesn't always look how others may think. Stargardt disease was supposed to define me.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
A blinding eye disease attempted to force me away from doing what I was born to do.
But it cannot stop me. I have the tools.
I will keep moving forward.
Pushing past the limits of this disability.
I know where to find support and where I can be seen.
Loss of sight won't blind our vision. Innovative research, educational resources, supportive community. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is leading the charge in finding treatments and cures for blinding diseases. Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
Well, what are some of the impacts on trade and logistics that we are seeing when it comes to the bridge collapse in Baltimore and the impacts on the port of Baltimore? We're going to talk about that here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. When the temperature goes down, so could your equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel Fuel is built with a balanced additive package to keep equipment moving. Learn more at cenex.com. Joining us now for an update on that situation on the East Coast and other logistics issues that we want to talk about and get an update on as well, Mike Steenhoek, Executive Director for the Soy Transportation Coalition, joining us now here on AOA. Mike, great to have you back on the show with us. Hope you're doing well.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with this tragic situation out in Baltimore, the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Such a terrible situation. And we're thinking, of course, about folks who've lost their lives and more. I want to focus on the ag export side here. It sounds like, for the most part, the Port of Baltimore is not a huge port for commodities, maybe for things like ag equipment. I guess clear this up for us. What are maybe some potential impacts we could see here, Mike?
Yeah, so when you look at just the volume of, say, soybeans that are exported from the Port of Baltimore, you know, you're looking at about 300 to 350,000 metric tons, you know, as reported by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Compare that to the lower Mississippi River in the New Orleans area. You know, last year we had about 20 million metric tons. You can have even a few years ago when our exports were stronger, 35 million metric tons. So Baltimore pales in comparison to things like you'll see it in the New Orleans area, in the Pacific Northwest, and some of these other launching points. You know, but, you know, as you said, it's, you know, the Port of Baltimore is one of our significant ports, particularly on the eastern seaboard. And it handles a lot of commodities and products that are integral to the U.S. economy. You mentioned farm equipment. That is one of those products that the port handles, both on the import and export side, as well as car, automobiles, and light trucks. So, you know, it's really obviously unfortunate due to, A, the loss of human life, and but then also simultaneously you halt operations at the port. But then you're also taking out a major surface transportation corridor with that bridge, because that's that bridge crossed the Chesapeake Bay. Mm-hmm. And so then you by having the bridge collapse, you know, there's no access into the port, no way to get out from the port until that bridge debris is cleared up. So it's really going to have a pretty significant impact on the region and on the broader economy.
Do we see the potential here that some of what would go to the Port of Baltimore could go to a different port on the East Coast, or maybe even around to Gulf ports potentially, whether it be New Orleans, Houston, et cetera? I mean, are there some ways to navigate around this situation temporarily?
Yeah, and we're already seeing just kind of anecdotal testimonials about diversions to New York, New Jersey, or Norfolk, or some of these other port facilities. And then, of course, you know, you've got ships that were actually at berth at the Port of Baltimore, and now you've got the bridge collapse, and now they're just essentially trapped. And that also means the cargo that's on those ships. So depending on how time sensitive they are, eventually it's going to have to get unloaded and then diverted onto rail or trucking to get to its final destination. So, you know, because this is going to take a while to remove that debris and ensure the shipping channel is suitable. That's obviously going to be one of the first initiatives. And then obviously the replacement of the bridge is going to take a multi-year, you know, time horizon. So obviously this is something that's going to, you know, we're going to see really the ripple effects of this for a while.
Yeah, well, we'll continue to watch the situation, see how it evolves, and thinking about other areas for logistics here as we get ready for the spring season. We still are seeing exports, of course, of commodities out of the country, like soybeans. What are some of the latest you're hearing in terms of the Mississippi River, of course? We've had a lot of talk about that. And last time you and I talked, it seemed like things had gotten back to more normal conditions on the Mississippi, Mike.
Yeah, you know, so the water levels have rebounded since this fall to the extent that you're no longer in these kind of stated drought conditions, and with the mitigating efforts with barge transportation. But when you look at water levels on the river, and then you compare it to kind of the multi-year average, or the kind of the range that you'll find that we normally would expect, we're at the very low end of that range. And so while it's good that we're in more suitable conditions for barge transportation, and yet we have to remember that, you know, while we focus on our exports in the fall, during the spring you do have a lot of fertilizer shipments head northbound on barge. So it is an important time of the year for barge transportation. So it's great you've got barge service that has resumed. But given the fact that we're at the very low end of that range, what that means is if we had any kind of persistent drought conditions or dry conditions that will continue, it won't take much for all of a sudden for us to get kicked back into low water conditions and any kind of restrictions on barge transportation that may need to be imposed. So bottom line, we're proceeding into 2024, not from a position of strength, but a position of weakness.
We're talking with Mike Steenhoek, Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition here on AOA. Mike, what about rail logistics? I haven't heard a lot about rail lately, so I'm hoping no news is good news and things have been operating relatively normally here. Anything you're watching on the rail side?
Yeah, I mean, you can always, you know, find various, you know, individual testimonials from particular shippers that have, you know, concerns with rail service. But, you know, kind of, you know, overall, I mean, it you know, I've considered many times as of late, given our problems on the Mississippi River, being very thankful that we've also have a pretty strong rail sector that can, you know, pick up the slack. But also, it's all about this notion of spreading your eggs across multiple baskets and not putting all your eggs in one basket. And the fact that we've got the ability to transport product via rail to a variety of coasts that's less contingent and sensitive to the current weather or climate issues. That's something that's really encouraging and something we obviously need to maintain. So I'm not hearing any real major concerns with rail service right now, and that's obviously a good thing.
How are soybean movement in general? I know we've seen some of the recent numbers from USDA. You know, we look at the weekly export inspections and the weekly export sales and shipments reports and more. And, you know, there's been talk we're down a bit from last year, but still looking okay. I mean, what's your sense of soybean movement here across the country to export terminals and moving it out to export partners, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to really differentiate when you see the overall aggregate numbers. It's to what extent is that attributed to just lower export volumes versus to what extent is that compounded by infrastructure challenges like low water in the Mississippi River? You know, and overall we've got it, you know, we do have some headwinds confronting our exports, but you know, I guess the big picture is we still have a lot of international demand, and we still have, with all of its inadequacies and all of its challenges, we still have, you know, the best infrastructure in our ability to transport things like soybeans and other agricultural commodities to the world marketplace. So that's obviously the good news. But yeah, we obviously do have a lot of concerns. You know, you've got, when you look at things like we've experienced on the Mississippi River, simultaneously, we have the two most famous canals in the world, the Panama Canal and the Suez Canal, providing challenges for entirely different reasons. That's obviously very unique. So it's obviously there are some real concerns that we have when it comes to our supply chain. But again, we do have a lot of resilience.
I'm glad you brought up both those canals, too. I know in the case of the Suez, we still have the ongoing war issues in the Middle East with Israel and Gaza and the Houthi rebels in Yemen. The Panama Canal, though, any change to water levels? Have we seen any improvement, or are we still very concerned about the Panama Canal?
Yeah, we're still concerned about it, but you know, the Panama Canal Authority, fortunately, a little over a week ago, made an announcement that they're increasing the number of daily transits from 24 per day to 27 per day. That's obviously a movement in the right direction. Now, we're still down from the normal 36 to 40 transits per day. So that's going to provide a little bit of relief. But still, the benefits to that will largely continue to accrue to other ocean vessels like cruise ships, container ships, automobile carriers, liquefied natural gas, less realized by agriculture. But again, it's a movement in the right direction, but I really don't anticipate to see a major game change at the Panama Canal until what's called the wet season will commence. And that's in May. You know, during the dry season in Panama, which we're currently in until the end of April, they get about 1 to 3 inches a month. When the wet season occurs in May through mid-December, you can easily get 10, 15 inches of rain a month, 20 inches of rain on average in the month of November. So that's when we're really starting to expect, if you're going to see the pendulum swing in Panama, it's probably not going to happen until we get into that rainy season, which again commences in May.
All right. Mike, real quick, 30 seconds, final thoughts from you. Anything you want our farmers to keep in mind here as we're getting into the spring planting season?
Well, I just think we're continuing to really focus on increasing the resilience of the supply chain. And it's kind of analogous to a track and field relay race, where we've seen the baton get dropped in many ways over the last several years for a variety of reasons. And we just talked about some of those examples of that. We need to continue to promote the resilience of the supply chain. And if we do that, agriculture will be well positioned for success.
Mike Steenhoek, Executive Director, Soy Transportation Coalition. Mike, thanks for joining us today on AOA. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Jesse.
All right, coming up next on the show, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel. We'll get an update on HPAI and dairy cattle with Dr. Michael Dykes from IDFA. He joins us next on AOA.
Now. We tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But sometimes we don't see what's right in front of us. Victory over cancer is in front of us. Right now, cancer research is saving lives. Cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to new discoveries and new treatments, and ultimately, one day, victory over cancer. Right now, one out of every two men and one out of every three women will get cancer in their lifetime. Now is your moment. You may save someone you love. The V Foundation has the skill, the speed, and the strength to achieve victory over cancer. Because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at v.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section. When Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL, opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. Anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Join us the first Wednesday of every month on AOA for the latest episode of The Monthly Grind with our friends at the National Corn Growers Association. We'll discuss the latest topics surrounding the corn industry, the relationships between corn and other parts of the agricultural supply chain, the newest initiatives and partnerships from NCGA's Market Development Action Team, and much more. That's the first Wednesday of every month for The Monthly Grind on AOA. It's a show you don't want to miss.
When it comes to cereal disease protection, Prosaro Pro 400 SC fungicide from Bayer makes all the difference. With three effective active ingredients for overlapping control of foliar and head diseases, and a flexible application window for head scab, it's formulated to lower DON, protect yield potential, and promote superior grain quality. Prosaro Pro. The future of plant health starts here. Visit ProsaroPro.com to learn more. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your car donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
And we're back, looking at another lopsided matchup, Jim. Today we have a combine taking on a train.
Yeah, that heavy train is about 1,000 times heavier than the combine. No competition there.
Right, especially given that it'll take at least a mile to stop that train.
That's 18 football fields.
It's no contest. Every day, people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
This message brought to you by Operation Lifesaver.
The landscape of media has changed, and people are more skeptical than ever about where they get their news and information. While major news outlets show decreasing credibility, your local farm radio station still shows strong marks. In a recent survey, farmers rated information from their farm broadcasters as almost twice as reliable as major news outlets. Farm radio continues to be transparent, honest, and trustworthy. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Trust your local experts at Cenex or visit Cenex.com for more information. All right, now we want to get an update on the situation, the evolving situation surrounding the finding of highly pathogenic avian influenza, HPAI, in dairy cattle in Kansas and Texas. Joining us now to provide an update, Dr. Michael Dykes, President and CEO of the International Dairy Foods Association, IDFA. Michael, thanks so much for joining us here on AOA. Hope you're doing well.
Oh, Jess, thanks for having me.
Well, get us up to speed here again, finding avian influenza. USDA coming out on Monday and saying they found avian flu, HPAI, in a few different dairy cattle herds in Kansas and in Texas. And I want to stress there's no risk to human health here. Let's make that point immediately. But talk about what we've heard from USDA and everything that's kind of ongoing surrounding this right now, Michael.
Jess, thanks for having me. I have spoken to the Secretary of Agriculture, talking to the Undersecretary of Marketing and Regulatory Programs. I've talked to Ag Trade Ambassador McCaleb. I've talked to several veterinarians, having been a practicing dairy veterinarian myself. I'm still pretty well connected to the veterinary circles. I've talked to farmers. What we know, two herds in Texas and two herds in Kansas, APHIS has diagnosed, confirmed the presence of the virus. I want to reiterate strongly the message you just said. We know for a fact that the milk is safe and dairy products are safe to consume. There should be no concern. Pasteurization at high temperatures kills all the pathogens, microbes, including the influenza virus. So dairy products are perfectly safe to consume. There should be no question, no concern about that. The dairy farmers have special operations on their dairy farms to segregate, isolate any of their cows that are sick, not feeling well, and the grade A standards on the pasteurized milk ordinance mandate that that milk be dumped and not included into the milk supply. So there's another safeguard to assure consumers that milk and dairy products are safe to eat, and that people around the world that purchase our dairy products can be confident of that safety. And that we are stressing that all dairy farmers exercise strict biosecurity measures, make sure that they are monitoring traffic coming to the farms, limiting the traffic to the farms, taking precautions themselves when they're handling sick animals, as we would do and as practicing veterinarians do all the time when we experience any cows on the farm experiencing any kind of illness. So we would encourage farmers to notify their veterinarians immediately, and for veterinarians to work with their clients when they've ruled out other illnesses to alert the federal and state veterinarians as to what they're finding, and so that additional tests, additional work can be done on these herds as we continue to probe into this to learn everything we can about the extent of this illness.
Yeah, because I know right now, Michael, we don't quite know how HPAI has jumped from chicken and turkeys and birds over to dairy cattle. But again, to your points, we want to stress that biosecurity and really keeping an eye on your dairy herd here until we start to learn more, right?
Absolutely. We know it's carried from birds and the migratory patterns of birds as they come from the south toward the north in the spring. It's the right time of year. We believe it's bird droppings where the cows have commingled with that. But we need to continue to monitor this. We're pleased with the work that APHIS is doing. All the work of practicing veterinarians around the country, working with our dairy clients. And as we test more and as we learn more, we'll get more clarity on this. But it appears to be, as what we know now, not transmitted from cow to cow. It is transmitted from the migratory birds and from the droppings. And we just need biosecurity is our number one thing that we need to be practicing right now.
And thinking about biosecurity, I know some different guidance that you guys have available from the IDFA and as well the National Dairy Farm Program. A lot of that stuff, a lot of reference manuals and more can be found online, right, Michael?
Absolutely. The National Dairy Farm Program has an excellent source of several valuable biosecurity resources, steps to take. That's all been done. National Milk Producers Federation has put a lot of that together. So that information is all out there on the websites. Clearly, there's also you check with APHIS on the website as well for those kinds of things. Or talk to your local practicing veterinarian that's attending to the needs of your herd every day.
Definitely. Yeah. Stay in contact with your veterinarian. Michael, before we let you go here, got about a minute or so as we wrap up today's program. Again, we're watching the situation and keeping tabs on things. Do we anticipate there could be any impacts to trade and exports? I know you mentioned you've been talking with Secretary Vilsack and others. Do we anticipate there could be any issues there with this outbreak?
We do not, and I would stress on this point, it is essential that our trading partners rely on the World Organization for Animal Health, on the acknowledged science-based food safety steps taken, and U.S. dairy processing in preserving our market access. Our milk, our dairy supply is absolutely safe. There should be absolutely no restrictions, no interruptions in our trade flow. And we're encouraging, and I know our USTR office and the USDA Foreign Ag Service folks around the world in our embassies, and we're talking to them as well, they're encouraging that their trading partners rely on the OIE acknowledged science-based approach to managing these types of things.
Fantastic. Well, we do appreciate the time. We know it's a fluid situation. It's busy. But with that, Dr. Michael Dykes, President and CEO of the International Dairy Foods Association, IDFA. Michael, really appreciate it. Thanks for being with us on AOA again today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. With that, we are out of time here on AOA today, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. On the next AOA, we'll talk markets with Mike Zuzulo from Global Commodity Analytics, and John Bodie from the Corn Refiners Association will join us. Have a great rest of your day. I'm Jesse Allen. Thanks for listening to AOA.